Each and every year for the past 14 years, we've been experiencing ever higher temperatures. The world's going through records of climate change and temperature change. There's a big debate in Australia about how we are going to use renewable as opposed to any other kind of energy. I've got on the line Peter Martin, who is the economics editor of The Conversation Australia and visiting fellow of the Crawford School of Public Policy. We are talking about the economics of solar power in relation to nuclear power. Good afternoon, Peter.
G'day, David.
So we are going to be facing rancor and dissembling and all sorts of things over the next few months about nuclear power, aren't we?
Well, I don't know. I guess it depends on the extent to which it takes off as a public issue. On the face of it, the argument that the coalition, Peter Dutton, puts makes some sense. It sense in this way. We have wires, new transmission wires, are very expensive to build. And at the moment, they basically, in New South Wales, they all disseminate from the Hunter Valley, right? Because that's where the coal-fired power stations are. It's where the coal is. Rather than having power coming from all over the place or from solar farms that are somewhere not connected by wires, we should put a source of energy right there where it was using the same wires. Now, in South Australia, they've already done that. So Port Augusta was where the coal-fired power station was. It's closed. And it's full of windmills, largest conglomeration of wind power in Australia. The idea is that the Hunter Valley would have nuclear power stations there. And I said there's a certain sort of logic to that.
Yeah, well, one of the problems with nuclear is that once it's going, you can't turn it off.
And that's right.
And therefore, you'd have to turn off renewables, so to speak.
That is right. And it's actually the one of the, strangely, one of the oldest forms of power generation there is, because the nuclear power plant boils water. That's what it does. It makes steam. The steam turns a turbine. We're used to that. Solar power is different. Nothing turns. Nothing wears out. The Economist, and I write about this in The Conversation, The Economist had a special issue. It actually came out, The Economist magazine, came out just 3 days after Peter Dutton announced his nuclear policy. It was called The Dawn of the Solar Age. And they make the point that we've had this big advance in technology. Solar panels have been around for ages, but they haven't been very efficient. What happened was, you know how on TV screens or computer screens, in the old days, if you had a digital TV screen or computer screen, there'd be the odd pixel that didn't work. That no longer happens because of basically, these things are all made from sand, silicon, and they've had big advances in purifying sand. Originally, they were used for computer chips, but now they're being used for solar panels, and it means their efficiency has gone up hugely, and the cost of generating power from them has gone down massively. And what's happening now is that they're being installed at a frightening rate, set to become the biggest source of electricity by the next decade, and probably the biggest source of any power by the decade after. That's exceeding oil and gas and everything else. And they're growing so fast. There is, as you say, there's the solar in houses, but there's the solar on solar farms that they'll sort of make the nuclear plants look silly because the nuclear plants, every kind of plant really, will need to turn off or do something else in the middle of the day.
Now, the Smart Energy Council estimates the cost of building the 7 nuclear reactors proposed by the opposition at between 116 and 600 billion of taxpayers' dollars, and will only produce 3.7% of the Australian energy use in 2050.
Yes, and there's a projection. You need to click through to it at the in my piece in The Conversation, graphical projection of what will happen to 2060. And by then, worldwide, on the graph, you can't even see nuclear. So nuclear plants are being built, but they're shrinking as a proportion of power because solar and wind are being built much faster. The Economist says that solar capacity is now doubling every 3 years, meaning it increases 10 every decade. They reckon that the next tenfold increase in the next decade will be the equivalent of taking all of the world's nuclear reactors, multiplying them by 8, and it'll happen in less time than it takes to build one. So the future is clearly solar. And indeed, what I find odd is that some of the things that The Economist is saying about solar now, I remember hearing about nuclear in my youth. That is that power, at least at certain times of the day, will be so cheap it won't be worth charging for. And The Economist talks about how this is unusual. Usually when we have a new technology that's cheaper, people use more of it. Happened with wood, happened with oil, happened with gas. Until you reach until there's a shortage of wood, coal, gas, whatever. With solar power, there's no obvious shortage. Obviously, the fuel doesn't cost anything. That's the sun. But sand is abundant and cheap. Now we have the means of using it. What will be expensive?
Batteries.
That's right. The things for batteries, nickel, lithium, are expensive. But Australia happens to have them. We've got more nickel than we want at the moment, if you're following the news. But we've got those things, you know, they happen to be here. And also they're developing ways of making batteries with other things, making batteries, believe it or not, with salt. And if you look at your periodic table, you'll see that sodium is just underneath lithium, which means it reacts the same as lithium, except that it's heavier. And for some, obviously not for cars, but for all sorts of situations, weight doesn't really matter. And so we don't know what's going to happen, but it is looking, given that solar has come down in price so much, China's invested a lot, now it doesn't need to invest anything. It's, you know, so easy to produce, it's paying for itself. It looks as if that will happen with batteries. Certainly the projections have nuclear really not being there, you know, as a proportion of the world's power in the future.
Okay, so the issue is that with renewables, solar and wind, there'll be times of the day that we won't be able to harness the energy that they're producing. So there'll need to be backup in the form of batteries, also likely gas.
Yes, although I don't think anyone is suggesting that gas would stay there forever. It's a bit hard to have gas if you've got a target of net zero by 2050.
Well, that's a conundrum, isn't it? So pumped hydro has been spoken about. And my understanding of pumped hydro is you have two dams, one up high and one low.
That's right.
And you pump the water from the low dam to the top one, and then when you need the power, you let it run through the generators or whatever, and you create electricity.
Yeah, it's very expensive to build. Yeah, but by the way, it's not new. So the Snowy Hydro Scheme, which we think of as producing power, has operated as a battery for decades. What's happened is that your coal-fired power stations produce power steadily, as nuclear does, produce it through the night when we don't need much. And that, in the past, has been used to take water to the top of the mountain, and then in the daytime, at peak times when it's needed, it's gone down. The what will happen if Snowy Hydro 2 ever gets built, it's problems with it, construction, but at a bigger scale, it'll sort of do the opposite. It'll take solar power from the middle of the day, when there's a lot of it, and then release it after the sun goes down. There's all sorts of new technologies being talked about and trialled. One is, salt, actually. Very large columns of salt that are heated by the sun shining on them, waves focusing sun on them, and then that gets so hot that it produces power in the conventional way overnight. We don't know how it's going to turn out, and we'll certainly need gas while these other technologies are being worked out.
Should we feel guilty?
Look, I work in Parliament House in Canberra as the economics editor of The Conversation, but I happen to be, work among politicians and hang out with them. And I think it's a fair bet that any government that doesn't allow the lights to remain on
won't last.
will lose office. So the great thing about gas, particularly the modern gas things, which are sort of, they don't produce electricity in the conventional way. They're like turbines, like jet engines. The great thing about that is you can turn it on in 30 seconds.
Yes.
And so we're going to need that until we get these forms of storage. Even its supporters call it a transition fuel, but it should be the case that eventually, and we may have to make much more power than we need to make this happen. You know, we're making more than we need at the moment in the middle of the day. Firms are telling consumers, we don't want your power in the middle of the day. But that we'll need to make more than we need so that we've got enough for the times that we don't. And it's not going to be smooth. It's not going to be easy. Both sides of politics have signed up to net zero by 2050. And nuclear, it's sort of like the wrong answer or the right answer to a different question. Nuclear might have made sense if we used power steadily throughout the day and if we didn't have solar as we did now, which produces, in some cases in South Australia, more than 90% of the needs in the middle of the day. If we didn't have that, but we do. For nuclear, you wouldn't start from here. I guess that's my point.
Okay. Yeah. The advantage of pumped hydro and gas as opposed to coal and nuclear is that when we have renewable energy, but it has its downtime, so to speak, those can be turned on very quickly, whereas nuclear has to be going 24 hours a day, 7 days a week sort of thing.
Yeah, they say otherwise, but they're wrong. And they said that about coal too. They said, oh, we can turn coal-fired power stations down. And they did that. And that's why so many coal-fired power stations are breaking down and closing early, because they're not really designed
for Sopko, yes.
Yeah. Now, what about... To tell you the truth, there's... I know this isn't... What's the word? It's not... It doesn't fire the public's imagination, but the best thing we can do to even out, you know, the uneven supply of electricity is the unsexy demand management. Sun Metals in Queensland makes... I'm not sure what it smelts. I think it might be magnesium. But it is making money by turning off its heating just for 15 minutes at a time. And the metal doesn't solidify in that time. And given that it's only peaks that cause a problem or a sudden shortage of wind, or, you know, for a short time causes a problem, you can achieve an awful lot by using less in a way where you do it exactly as is needed. And we'll see more of that. It doesn't grab the attention as much as, you know, looking at a column of sodium or looking at windmills.
It can be a kind of metaphor for society, making do with using less.
Well, using less and using more. Remarkably, David, there's a firm that charges you the wholesale price for electricity plus $5 a month. I don't advise using it because the wholesale price can go very high. But some people are playing that market. And what they're doing, they have solar and they have batteries, is at times of high demand, they're selling their power to the network. And at times when there's too much power in the network, they're taking power, turning their cars on to charge them, running their washing machines, running their fridges, and getting paid for using up power. So it's not necessarily using less, it's altering the time that you use. Now, most of us can't be bothered. I couldn't be bothered. But big firms can make money doing that. So office blocks can make money by turning off their air conditioning at certain times when there's a lot of power, running the air conditioning really hard so the buildings get cool for the other time. So we're going to see more of this. It's not, you can't draw a picture of it. You can't, you know, it's nothing that anyone could object to. There's nothing that ruins anyone's view. But, you know, like, you know, cables and wind turbines are supposed to. But this will be a big part of the solution, actually, moving our demand up and down. The supply of power.
Okay, one last question, Peter. Should solar panels be mandatory for any new housing construction?
Well, we don't need it. Look, there's I think Australia has a huge capacity at the moment. What is being made mandatory in the ACT, where I live, is it's now... illegal is not quite the word, against the law to install gas. You can install gas if gas is already in the street, but if you are a developer developing a new suburb, you can't put the gas on. Now, that sort of thing will happen, but solar is now so attractive in its own right. It's way beyond the need for any subsidies. Really, anyone who is doing building is, you know, crazy, you know, financially, not to do it. And the things which are coming next are windows that let through visible light, but a lot of light isn't visible, but it can still be used to make power, and make power for the house. And these are likely to be, you know, become sort of standard because of the financial benefits in new building. We've moved beyond the... For solar, we've moved beyond the need for a stick or a carrot. It's making so much sense in its own right, and it's looking as if it's going to get more power for less, even cheaper as time goes on. The real action, where if the government wanted to have subsidies, it could be batteries. And one of the things that might happen is not batteries in every house, but batteries in every street so that power collection and supply becomes more local. Yeah. So it's sort of exciting.
It is exciting. The other aspect, just talking about construction of houses, you can also have roof tiles, can't you, and maybe even bricks that can harness the sun's energy.
And maybe even paint. And,
yes,
and
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
this again was unheard of. I remember when I was a school student, one of the essay assignments we had was there a future for solar? And most of the students said, nah, that would never happen. We were extremely wrong. And I think that the point of the Economist article that I linked to is that a lot of people haven't caught up with the dramatic improvement in what it can do, dramatic falls in price, you know, in the last decade. If I was to write about solar 10 years ago, you know, the CSIRO was to do the numbers, it would produce quite different numbers. Nuclear is an answer to a question, but it's not the question you'd ask when solar is so cheap, becoming so cheap, and it's not the question you'd ask given Australia's system of electricity, which is lumpy. Do you know that wind power, just before midnight, that's the peak in the day. And, you know, we know when the peak of solar is. We have a terribly lumpy power supply. We need something to fill in the gaps, absolutely. But we don't need something that can't fill in gaps.
Yeah. Okay, Peter, thank you very much. That's very interesting.
It's been a pleasure, David.
Peter Martin, thank you.